The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Heineke Digital presents The Mark. Who's Afraid? An audiobook podcast by Christian Heineke. Chapter 3, 28 Days. The Institute of Zoology at the University of Hamburg is somewhat tucked away in the Eimsbüttel district, situated at No. 3 Martin Luther Square. The building's architectural style fluctuated between Bauhaus and a typical German high school. The gray, cold morning sky enhanced Ruth's impression of the structure as uninviting. She had never felt at home in Hamburg. Having spent her entire life in a city like Lüneburg, the vastness of a metropolis like Hamburg felt absurd. Ruth entered the building and quickly glanced at the information board in the entrance area. Before she could orient herself, a young man with dreadlocks hurried past her, wearing a greasy German army parka and a Palestinian scarf. The eternal recurrence of the same, Ruth thought. Dieter Baumann Schmitz, with whom she had dated in high school, was so incredibly progressive that he carried his equally liberated mother's double name like a banner. Ruth had never slept with him during the class trip, only with Carmen Dietz. That revelation had clashed with Dieter's enlightened worldview. Despite his otherwise good manners, he had unleashed a torrent of unfriendly remarks when they parted. In that moment, she sensed impending trouble, as her heart yearned for connections with individuals of the same sex. Ruth followed the awkward reminder of her past into a lecture hall where about 100 students listened to a woman. She slipped inside and paused. She noticed more female students in attendance and saw one of them turn, seek her gaze, and smile. Ruth smiled back. Only then did she spot Marie. She had aged a little but remained a striking woman. "I wonder what you want here," Marie asked aloud to the hall. The question made Ruth flinch. It took her a moment to realize it was a rhetorical question directed at the audience. Marie didn't seem to have noticed her yet.
"Even though this is supposed to be an introduction to mammalogy, it's always this very event that draws you all in such numbers."
Marie glanced down at her own attire. She wore a simple, elegant outfit with a white coat that rendered her quite inconspicuous.
"It can't be my appearance." The audience laughed at her clever remark, but she silenced them with a look. "All right, then. Let's discuss what you're so incredibly interested in. Let's talk about cryptozoology. What animals come to mind in this area?"
No one responded. Then a shy girl raised her hand.
"Nessie," she whispered.
"Come again?" Marie asked.
The girl turned bright red and stared down at her notepad in embarrassment.
"Man, that was so stupid," hissed the boy next to her, the same boy from the foyer.
"That was not a stupid comment from Ms. Schrenders at all, Mr. Mueller. I just want her to repeat it a little louder."
Marie gave an encouraging wink to Ms. Schrenders.
"Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster," she said a bit louder, defiantly meeting Mr. Mueller's gaze. He attempted to shrink down in his seat.
"So you believe the Loch Ness Monster deserves serious scientific research?"
Laughter erupted in the hall. Marie gestured for silence.
"Well, Ms. Schwenders, you are absolutely right."
Silence fell over the room. Marie approached the girl and patted her arm. The girl beamed. "She's good. I forgot how talented she is," Ruth thought with admiration. Marie walked to her desk,
dimming the room lights as the projector cast a soothing blue square on the screen. She tapped a few keys on her laptop to start the presentation. On April 10, 1977, the crew of the Japanese fishing boat Zuiyomaru retrieved their nets about 30 miles off the New Zealand coast and found this inside. Marie tapped a key, and a photograph of a decomposed carcass of a four-finned creature with a long neck and an elongated head appeared on the screen. The crew had hoisted it aboard with a crane after it got caught in their nets. Its resemblance to the Loch Ness monster was striking. The Maru's crew took photos and measured the animal. It was 10 meters long and estimated to weigh several tons. Unfortunately, due to the overpowering odor of decay and an unknown liquid leaking from the torso, they threw the carcass back overboard. Marie displayed the next image, a photograph of a plesiosaurus. Ruth recognized it from Leone's dinosaur books. Leone, like every seven-year-old, had adored dinosaurs. In 2001, researchers discovered a 132-million-year-old plesiosaurus skeleton on the Scottish coast near Scarborough. This finding provided evidence of prehistoric animals resembling Nessie and the Maru's capture. A fascinated silence enveloped the room. Marie smiled, enjoying the excitement she stirred in her students, even if it meant occasionally opening the door to popular science. So, do I believe in a prehistoric monster in Loch Ness? No, I find that very unlikely. However, the probability that an animal on which this myth is based may still exist is much higher. On the screen appeared an image of a shapeless, dark fish. As you may already know, people thought the coelacanth had been extinct for 65 million years until they captured a living specimen in 1935. Marie scanned the astonished faces of her students. Despite our belief that we have thoroughly explored this world, nature continually surprises us with new survival strategies. She paused. Let me clarify. I don't want to encourage you with my brief lecture to drop everything in search of dragons or unicorns. Laughter erupted. My intention with this little popular science digression is to help you understand that the subject of your study... Marie paused, her gaze sweeping over the semi-darkness of the room, until it met Ruth's eyes. Ruth nodded at Marie, who appeared cool and distant. Is life itself. Now Marie sought Ruth's gaze again. Nothing in this world is more precious, more fascinating, and yet so fragile in an alarmingly simple way, Marie continued. Ruth had to swallow hard. And yet life almost always endures. If necessary, it can even outlast the small matter of a few million years with this trick. That's why you should be here. That's what biology is all about. There's nothing more thrilling than uncovering the secrets of Mother Nature. Thank you. A wave of appreciative knocking on their desks filled the room. The young Mr. Muller stood beside Marie, stuttering as he spoke. He wanted to write his thesis in her course and was now desperately attempting to make amends. An apology to me isn't necessary, Mr. Muller. You should apologize to Mrs. Schwenders, Ruth heard Marie say. The boy smiled shyly and hurried after her. Marie and Ruth exchanged glances, lingering for a moment. Dieter Baumann Schmitz, they both exclaimed in unison, surprising each other and then laughing. Ruth had shared stories about the infamous Dieter with Marie. Something we still share, Ruth thought. What are you doing here? Marie asked. I wanted to talk to you. Marie took a sip from her water bottle and nodded. So talk. Hello, darling, a deep, feminine voice said from behind them. Ruth turned around to see a tall, blonde woman in a loose coat and scarf sizing her up. No, she was assessing me. Instantly, the hairs on the back of Ruth's neck stood up. The woman towered over Ruth, her radiant beauty overshadowing any earthiness a potato sack could suggest. She moved with an effortless confidence, as if she never needed to worry about such things. Her straw blonde hair framed her dark blue eyes, narrow eyebrows, and full lips. Ruth felt an immediate dislike. The woman offered Ruth a friendly nod, pulled Marie close by one arm, and kissed her on the lips a moment too long. And you are? Ruth asked, her tone probing. She smiled and extended her hand. Her grip was firm and dry, her hands rough. Diana Kerber. The woman introduced herself.
You must be Ruth.
Gotcha, Ruth replied. Marie's told me a lot about you, Diana said. Ruth raised her eyebrows. Oh, really? Diana nodded. Ruth felt her throat dry up and a twinge in her chest. She glanced between Diana and Marie, then cleared her throat. How did you two meet? She asked, trying to sound calm. Marie smiled, clasping Diana's arm. Diana bought my parents' house. Oh, was all Ruth could muster. I'm a pianist, you know, Diana continued. I was tired of living in hotels. At first, I considered looking for a place in Hamburg, but when the realtor showed me the house in Lüneburg, I fell in love with it immediately. She paused. And then, as a bonus, there was a biology professor living nearby. Really, a bargain, Ruth remarked, feeling dizzy. Marie stepped closer, her familiar scent enveloping Ruth. What did you want to ask me? Ruth shook her head. Not important. We can discuss that another time, she said. What's the rush? Diana asked. Would you like to join us for lunch? She offered. Ruth shook her head more vigorously. No, thanks for the invitation, but I need to get back to Lüneburg. Okay, Marie replied. Some other time then. Goodbye, Ruth said to Diana Korber. Diana simply waved and murmured something to Marie. Ruth caught a snippet of their conversation. Now I understand what you mean by difficult. Outside by the car, Ruth leaned her forehead against the driver's door for a moment, feeling utterly miserable. The cold splashes of rain on the car's roof provided some relief. Taking a deep breath, she exhaled slowly, then opened the car door and slid into the driver's seat. Marie has a new friend. Diana has heard a lot about me. Diana bought Marie's house. Diana bought our house. We were supposed to grow old together in this house. Fuck! Ruth screamed, pounding the steering wheel with her fist. Then she started the engine and sped back to Lüneburg, tires screeching. The raging Falcon pub had closed an hour ago, but Peter Ulbrich knew where to find his boss. When she's having a moment, Red Ruth usually plays pool at the Raging Falcon, Schmidt had told him, adding in his broad Westphalian accent, there's this black chick. Sure enough, a beautiful dark-skinned woman was polishing beer glasses behind the counter. Ulbrich asked her about Ruth, and she gestured toward the pool tables with a nod. He walked through the dimly lit space, following the reassuring clack of billiard balls. Ruth was at one of the last tables in the back, her focus unwavering as she lined up her next shot. Clack! The white ball rolled across the green felt and sank a ball into the middle side pocket with a satisfying sound. Did Schmidt tell you where I was? Ruth asked, still not looking up. Ulbrich cleared his throat before replying. He did, but the dirty light gray new beetle outside finally gave me the crucial clue. She raised her eyebrows. Not bad, Ulbrich grinned. Ruth leaned her cue against the wall and walked over to a small bistro table in the corner. A half-smoked cigar smoldered in an ashtray. She flicked off the compact block of ash and took a drag from the remaining cigar, which Ulbrich recognized as a Cohiba. Gerhard Schroeder smokes these too. Really? Ruth replied, exhaling smoke with satisfaction. Ulbrich fiddled with his belt, the black police uniform fitting him well. I've been looking for you all day, he finally said. Ruth nodded. I was in Hamburg. What were you doing in Hamburg? Ulbrich asked. I went to see an old friend. She's a biologist. I thought she might have some insights about what mauled the boy. And? She didn't have time, Ruth said curtly, squinting over Ulbrich's shoulder at Selina. It was better if Selina didn't find out about her visit with Marie. She was sensitive about Ruth's ex-girlfriend. That's it? Ulbrich asked. Yep, Ruth replied.
Why do you ask? She inquired, tilting her head.
You're completely hammered. He pointed at the dozen empty glasses on the table. Following his gaze, she nodded.
Could be.
You shouldn't drink so much, Ulbrich advised. Ruth nodded again.
Do you find me attractive?
She suddenly asked. Ulbrich blushed. Ruth smiled.
I'm flattered.
He looked at her, confused.
You aspire to be my knight, she explained. That's nice.
A bit over the top, but nice.
I am nice, Ulbrich muttered.
I'm not. Yesterday I knocked out one of your teeth. She pointed at his mouth.
How's that tooth?
She asked, genuine guilt in her voice. Ulbrich's smile faded. I miss it, he replied tersely.
I'm sorry.
She paused, considering. Maybe he was someone she could talk to.
Would you like to hear something? She asked.
Sure.
Wait a minute.
Ruth raised a finger and stood up, noticing the pub swaying around her. With the grace of a gunslinger, she made her way to the bar. Once there, she turned back to him and raised her finger again.
Hold on.
She pivoted and staggered toward the restrooms. The dark-skinned beauty behind the counter shot Ruth an understanding smile, before turning to Ulbrich and extending her hand. I'm Selena, by the way. Peter Ulbrich. Ruth's new colleague? Ulbrich nodded. My condolences. He shrugged. We're just working through some teething problems. Selena smiled, revealing perfect teeth that hinted at American origins. She glanced toward the women's restroom where Ruth had just disappeared. Yeah, that sounds like Ruth. She leaned in slightly, and Ulbrich caught a glimpse of her cleavage, which was striking. He focused on the advertising on a beer mat.
I think you should postpone your conversation until tomorrow. She rarely drinks much, but today... She trailed off, her expression turning somber. The murder of the child, you know. It's all coming back up, I guess.
What do you mean?
You don't know what happened? Selena asked.
No.
After a long pause, she continued. Ruth lived with a woman who had a child named Leonie. Then the little girl disappeared without a trace. I didn't know that, Ulbrich whispered. Selena fell silent just as Ruth returned.
Okay, Ulbrich, let's talk.
Ulbrich shook his head. No, we'd better talk tomorrow. Do you want me to drive you home?
She's staying at my place, Selena interjected.
Ulbrich looked between them and nodded.
Okay. See you tomorrow then, Chief.
Ruth watched Ulbrich leave, puzzled. She sensed their conversation was important, but the alcohol had clouded her thoughts. What had Selena just said?
I'm staying overnight?
Selena leaned closer, her body pliable.
Sure. She whispered in Ruth's ear. On the couch.
Selena poured two glasses of tequila and handed one to Ruth. Ruth smiled, raised her glass, and toasted Selena.
Sounds great.
An eerie sound jolted Dennis from his sleep. A hiss followed by a dull growl faded into a steady, low rumble. It felt like something heavy walked past him. A monster, Dennis thought. A monster that had awakened and would eat him right here and now. He blinked, trying to open his eyes, but somehow they felt glued shut. It seemed to be some kind of bandage. Then he remembered that crazy man had caught him, beaten him, and put this bandage on him. He struggled to open his eyes again. The right eyelid hurt quite a bit, but he managed to pry it open. Through the gauzy veil, he stared at the enormous mouth of a Balrog. The eerie sound made sense now. The Balrog was such a powerful and evil creature that even Legolas the elf feared him. Dennis knew this because he had an action figure of Legolas, a gift from the Easter Bunny, though he had broken the elf's sword off the same day. His dad had scolded him and partly repaired it with superglue. Dennis tried to move, but zip ties bound him. He had seen something like that on TV when the police arrested someone. The Balrog remained still, which was little comfort. Such a creature was cunning.
It had even defeated the mighty wizard Gandalf, who was almost as clever as Dennis's dad. He tried to slide away from the Balrog. The floor was damp and slippery, like in a cellar, or the underground realm of Moria, home to the dwarves. In a moment, the Balrog would devour him, and that would hurt a lot. He was on the verge of tears when a strange voice froze him.
"Are you afraid of the heater?" the voice asked.
Dennis was so shocked to hear a human voice that instead of crying, he just gulped. He tried to speak, but only a hollow croak emerged.
"Wait,"
the voice said. It belonged to a little girl. Moments later, he felt a soothing plastic bottle against his lips.
"Slow down. Not so fast,"
the girl commanded. It turned out to be Coke. He drank too quickly and choked, the sugary liquid trickling down his chin.
"Gee, what a mess." A thin sleeve brushed against his mouth. It smelled like it came out of a tomb.
The bottle returned to his lips and he drank more carefully. Once he had enough, he turned his head away and she set the bottle down. He belched loudly.
"You've been naughty, haven't you?"
she said sternly. He looked around. What he had thought was a Balrog in the darkness turned out to be a radiant heater, something he recognized from the construction sites his dad sometimes took him to.
"Who are you? Where are we?"
he asked the little girl. "My name is Alice. I don't know exactly where we are."
"I'm Dennis."
In the dim light, he tried to see her face. She looked about his age, maybe a bit younger, with blonde hair braided into pigtails. It looked silly, but he refrained from saying so. Her face was dirty, and the light spots under her eyes showed she had been crying recently. He continued to survey their surroundings. They were in a small basement room, similar in size to his own. The concrete walls were old and crumbling, and a pockmarked steel door, once gray, was the only exit. Somewhere water dripped. The dwarf kingdom of Moria came to mind again. The girl looked at him.
"We're in the basement of a witch's house," she stated.
"What makes you think that?"
"Don't you know the fairy tale?" she asked.
"Which one?" he replied.
"Well, Hansel and Gretel, silly,"
Alice said, contorting her face like a governess.
"Of course I know it," he replied impatiently. "But fairy tales are just stories."
"I see," Alice remarked.
"Huh.
If fairy tales are just stories, then why did you talk in your sleep about a Balrog that wants to eat you?"
"A Balrog. That's from Lord of the Rings," he replied tersely, trying to sound arrogant.
His dad sometimes did that with the workers at the construction site, calling it earning respect. It seemed to work with Alice.
"Never heard of it," she said.
"Well, you're a girl," he shot back, realizing it might have been too harsh. "It's a movie," he added.
Alice studied him.
"You're not very polite to a lady. I bet you come from a bad family and get spanked often," she deduced.
"No, I don't."
"Well, I'm not allowed to watch movies like that. My mom thinks they have too much violence and make you stupid."
He didn't know how to respond. All his friends had seen Lord of the Rings, so he had too.
Plus, Legolas was cool.
Alice rubbed her nose with a little brown teddy bear, equally dirty. She nearly nibbled one of its eyes off, which hung by a thread. Noticing his interest, she pressed the bear against her chest, the eye swinging back and forth.
"This is Teddy," she said. "I know it's childish, but Teddy helps me when I feel alone and blue."
Dennis frowned. He didn't understand what blue meant. He hadn't interacted much with girls before. He preferred soccer, Lord of the Rings, or playing on his PlayStation.
"That's okay,"
he said generously, squirming to loosen his ties.
"Can you help me get loose?"
Alice shook her head.
"Why aren't you tied up too?" he asked.
"Gunther thinks I'm sweet and that I'm no trouble."
The name Gunther sent a wave of panic through Dennis.
He remembered the slow-motion image of Gunther's fist flying toward him, followed by the disgusted look on his face.
Is Gunther here? Dennis asked anxiously. Alice nodded. She pointed to the red glow of the radiator.
He just turned on the heater.
Radiant heater, Dennis corrected her. In response, she stuck her tongue out at him.
Radiant heater, then.
Now, can you help me undo my bonds? Dennis asked hopefully.
Alice firmly shook her head.
Gunther would hit me. I don't want him to. You're the one he hit. And you can't see it, but your face looks terrible.
Dennis sighed.
Look, Alice, I think we need to get out of here fast.
He struggled against his restraints again, but the cable ties only tightened around his wrists.
Not a chance, Alice replied, watching his futile efforts with indifference.
Why not?
Because of Gunther.
Is Gunther always around?
She considered his question for a moment.
Sometimes he fetches food and drinks for us. Then it's quiet for a while.
That was something. Maybe they could escape unnoticed. He felt an uncomfortable tugging in his bladder.
I have to pee, he announced.
You might as well pee your pants, Alice said.
I can't.
She shrugged.
Don't be a baby.
I'm not a baby.
You are.
Untie me.
With what?
The tugging eased slightly, but he knew he couldn't hold it much longer.
What do you think Gunther is doing with us?
He's making us fat, Alice explained.
What?
Dennis exclaimed.
Nonsense, he replied firmly.
Alice sighed and fell silent. After a moment, she moved closer.
You know what?
What?
I don't think fairy tales are just stories.
You think so? Dennis asked, swallowing hard.
Yes. Gunther is making us fat, just like in fairy tales, so the wicked witch can eat us.
Suddenly, Dennis felt warmth spreading in his pants. His bladder had emptied without him even trying. He sobbed.
Shh, Alice said softly as he cried. It's okay. It's going to be okay.
She comfortingly stroked his head.
Night fell, and the small northern town settled into silence. Ruth and Selena settled in for a well-deserved sleep on the narrow pull-out couch in Selena's cozy apartment on Wandrom Street, the only bed available in the apartment. Meanwhile, Dennis and Alice huddled in a dark, eerie dungeon, anxiously awaiting their uncertain fate, rescue or doom. Further north, in Hamburg, Marie slept peacefully in the arms of her new love. Diana Korber gently stroked Marie's hair, lost in thought as she gazed out the bedroom window at the night sky. The gray clouds that had shrouded Hamburg had parted, allowing a few stars to peek through, highlighting the still, nearly full moon. The moon. La Lune. Her secret, devoted lover. Just then, Marie sighed softly in her sleep.
Don't be jealous, my dear, Diana thought, brushing a lock of dark hair away from Marie's face.
The sudden glow of her cell phone broke her reverie. She picked it up from the nightstand and glanced at the incoming text message. After reading the brief content, she smiled and set the phone back down. She then stroked Marie's shoulder, noticing a small reddening of the skin, an indication that significant changes were on the horizon for Marie. At last, the moment had arrived, Diana thought as she drifted off to sleep.
Their eyes meet across the lecture hall. Time stands still. A blonde steps between them. With eyes that seem to kill. 28 days until the moon is full. days until the truth unfolds. 28 days until the beasts come out to play. Memories flood through her mind. Somewhere in the darkness, she fears what she might find. The clock is ticking down. Devil's work has just begun. 28 days until the moon is full. 28 days until the truth unfolds. 28 days until the beasts come out to play.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital audiobook podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.